Welcome to the Working Hands Podcast. I'm your host, Tony of Woodland Iron, joined by Keith of Blackthorn Concepts and Chris of Full Steam Designs. What's going on, boys?
What?
What's going on?
So Chad took the week off, so we got Chris here. I'm sure you guys know him. If you know us, you probably know Chris. He's a friend of the show. You know his
Long-time
name.
Long-time supporter.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's a supporter of our podcast as well as probably every podcast you guys listen to.
Yeah, a couple of them.
A few of them. So what do you got going on, Chris? What's new? Excited to be here?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, just been working on my car project a lot.
We'll get into that.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah, that's been a big thing lately. That's been one of the only things lately, really. But that just finished up a video the other day on a desk that I built.
What about you, Tony? Up to anything good lately?
I've been pretty quiet in the shop, actually. It's been mainly right now has been focused on getting back to the gym after a good 2 to 3 weeks off. I'm now one of the coaches, so I'm now coaching as well as training. So it's an interesting change. I was helping a lot of the members there anyways, so it just kind of fit to start coaching. So it'll help offset the cost of the gym and stuff like that. So it'll be nice.
Good.
How about you?
I haven't been doing anything. I'm traveling for the holiday down here in America. We have a holiday this week. Chad's off traveling. Much needed vacation for him and the fam. But I'm traveling, but I could do this. So we're here. Brought Chris home. So at home in the shop, I'm still working on the shop. I still have the pod. I'd say next weekend I'll be back to fully operational. But until then, not much has changed in my realm.
And but you got me thinking about that pod thing.
Oh, the pod is great.
That sounds great, yeah.
I unloaded everything, and the shop is so clean right now, I don't want to load anything back in. Like, I have some tools. Like, I have the CNC in there and the table saw. I don't even want to move in the router tables and the bandsaw. I just want to get rid of everything. Get rid of all of it.
Yeah, so, like, I got a detached garage that I do my car stuff in, and when we only moved in like a year ago, and that kind of became storage for everything. So like just everything got dumped in there. And the only way I can ever see getting it cleaned out good would be to like get one of those pods or something and just completely empty it out. I got to put up a drywall or something on the walls. And that's probably going to be what I end up doing now that I heard that you did that. I think that's a great idea.
It's a great way to go. And due to some other reasons, I had to go 2 months, but being able to empty it, like you get it emptied in a day. I mean, it's not hard to empty it. And then doing the work is probably another weekend. The third week, you, in theory, if you had a plan before you got the pod, you could bring everything back in. I didn't have a plan, so I wasn't ready to bring everything back in. And then I have a vacation this week, so I'm going 2 months, but in theory, you could be done in a month. With the way you go, full steam on everything. you'd be done in a weekend.
It'll be 3 months.
No,
I'll change my mind 3 times about how I do it, and then start a couple other projects in between.
Yeah. So if you don't know Chris already, he's aptly named Full Steam Designs. This guy does everything. I think in the past week he's been building a wooden car, building a desk, doing a laser video, and I believe you're still working on your kitchen.
Yeah, I haven't really worked on it, but should be.
He works full time outside of making. It's ridiculous. But I'm mainly interested in your car. What is the deal? What was your inspiration behind making this car?
So, another podcast is doing a challenge where you had to come up with something that was made out of wood for your other hobby. And I'm a long time hot rodder. I love old school hot rods. I built a 28 Model A, a 31 Model A, helped a couple other guys build their cars. And, you know, I've always wanted to build like a boat tail speedster. That was kind of a vintage race car that guys used to build. When they announced, you know, what this this challenge was going to be, it just clicked for me. And I went out and started looking around on Facebook Marketplace, found a car in Georgia. And I just happened to be talking to a guy about it. He said, man, I got a buddy right by there. Cause I was saying, you know, I don't really have time to go get it. He's like, man, I got a buddy right by there. Let me see just how close he is. he was just coming by Georgia, and he ended up going and grabbing the car for me, dropping it off, so I didn't have to do anything. It was perfect.
So jealous. And,
I really lucked out with that, because I legitimately didn't have the time to go get it. So yeah, he dropped it off.
So let's give some background here, though. The car that you got was just a rolling frame.
Yep.
Right, a drivetrain and rolling frame.
Yeah, complete drivetrain. Yeah.
Not running, right? You got it not running.
Should be able to run. it should be able to run, I think.
So which model Ford is it?
So it's a Model A. It's like a 28 to 31. I think this one is actually a 31 based off the serial numbers on it.
Okay.
But yeah, just no body. The guy had bought the car to use the body. A lot of guys will do that. You know, pull the bodies off, put it on like a newer style chassis or some aftermarket chassis.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, it's exactly what I wanted. Most guys don't want the frames and like the old style frames and the old style suspension and brakes and all that stuff. And that's exactly what I wanted.
That's awesome. When did this thing start? September, right? Middle of September?
Yeah.
End of September?
Towards the end. Yeah, middle to end. Usually they're about 2 months, these challenges. So yeah, this
the
one
Modern Maker Podcast, right? Modern Maker Podcast with the Rockler Hobby Challenge.
And
you called me the day that came out, and you're like, this is what I'm thinking. And I would say that was like, what day does that come out? Like Thursdays or Tuesdays or something? You had the car that weekend. Right.
I think I had it like 2 days later, actually. I got lucky with having that guy just happen to be driving by there. So yeah, the stars were aligned on that one. That worked out good.
And then in 2 months, you've basically built a upside down canoe for a car body.
Yeah, pretty much.
For those that aren't watching and haven't, or are driving and haven't looked at Chris's Instagram, which why you haven't, I don't know. We mention him like every week here. But he's building an upside down canoe, essentially wooden. It's not cedar strip, but it's like a cedar strip canoe that's upside down as a car body for a 1930, you said, Model A?
Yeah, 31. Yeah.
In the boat tail speedster style. It's pretty impressive. Yeah.
The only thing is canoe kind of downplays the size of this thing. Yeah, it's more like a dinghy, kind of like a the thing is massive. By the time you're done, that's only going to be a lot of work.
What are the wood boats? Chris Crafts? It's like building a Chris Craft, but with four wheels is a better way to put it. What wood did you decide to use?
Cypress. So I was trying not to have to buy stuff for it. And I just happened to have a bunch of cypress that I had bought a few years ago, and it was sitting inside. This was all local stuff. It was sitting inside, just drying out. And so it's definitely good and dry by now. I just started running that through the planer, cutting it into quarter inch strips, and then, putting the bead and flute on them.
So it's a quarter inch thick piece of cypress. By how wide is the strip? 3/4 inch? How wide is
it? Yeah, about 3/4. 7/8 to 3/4.
7/8 to 3/4. Are they all equal, or whatever material you had is what it is?
So I removed a lot from them.
As the non-wood guy, cypress, I know I got woodland in my last name, but cypress is what? Is softwood, hardwood? Like what? What would it compare to, I guess?
Softwood. I mean, you know, it's
like a cedar.
I don't know. It's hard to explain. Yeah.
Like a cedar. It seems to move and bend like cedar with the way you're steaming it and everything. So
Yeah. It even without the steam, you know, it bent pretty good. But it's just kind of a lot of straight grain. But, you know, then I've got some pieces that have some kind of crazy grain going on. A little bit more difficult to bend.
So let's go back. You mill up all your cedar strips or your cypress strips. Then you take your body frame and you build essentially a buck, right? It's called a buck.
Yep.
You build a buck on top of the car frame that is going to be like the framework, the skeleton of the body shape that you're building. I'm trying to see if I'm explaining it right.
Yeah, basically. So I had originally kind of thought maybe I would build like a aluminum body for it. And, you know, really you start that the same way where you build like a buck, you know, you have your skeleton all laid out. You got your different rib pieces that are, you know, the exact size of the car. But instead of doing it with the metal, I'm doing it with wood. And that whole structure is going to stay in there. I've glued everything right to it. So okay. It's, you know, I guess probably the more traditional way or the more correct way would have been to build it around that and then remove it. So you'd have something super light. But I wanted something a little more durable.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like I
think it's a little easier this way too.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like it's going to be that much heavier with that. I mean, there's very little framework that you put in there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I don't know, maybe a sheet and a half of plywood total.
What's that? 80 pounds maybe.
Yeah. Not much. Yeah. I imagine I can not lift the whole body, but I'm sure if it was bolted down, I could lift up, you know, one side of it.
Yeah.
Probably one or two other people could help me lift the whole body off.
Now, when does this competition end?
The end of the month. So I got, I don't know, from this point, 6 days, I think.
As we record. So by the time you guys see this, you will have, what day is Saturday?
Here's 3 days, give or take.
They'll have 3 days to watch the final of the build. But, I mean, obviously they can go back to everything. And you're going to do a YouTube video on this, I assume?
Yeah. I'll probably have a couple on it. You know, this one here is just getting all the wood part done of the body. You know, and then later on, I'm going to come through and fiberglass it. I got some mechanical work to do. I got to actually get it running and all that stuff. So I'll break that up into a couple different videos.
So for right now, you're just looking to get the body done at this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
The woodworking portion.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that was enough.
Yeah. So by the end,
it's a lot of work.
Talking to you every day. I don't know how you're getting through this. I don't know how you made it as far as you did.
Yeah.
But so basically by the end of the month, you're going to have the finished cedar strip portion. The door lines will be cut and it'll all be sanded and prepped. And
yeah. Ready. That's the goal. That's what I'm going for. After we get off here, I'm going back out to work on it a little more.
Nice.
Got up so about 5 o'clock this morning and started.
The long days. So yeah. During the course of this, you decided you needed to steam bend some of it. So you ran out one day in the past week, I'd say, bought a steam bender, built the steam, but learned how to steam bend. You've never steam bent anything before. You learn how to do that, and you do all these complex curves at the cowl. Would have been faster if you just metal worked it.
Yeah. So actually, I didn't need it at the cowl. I was able to get all those pieces without steam bending anything. The tail is where I really need all that. And last night was actually the first pieces I got like bent and got to stay the shape that I wanted them. And then when I got up this morning, I glued them in place, and you know, I took the clamps off and they stayed the shape that I wanted them to stay. And I glued them on.
Now, are you past that hurdle of all the steam bent parts?
Yeah, or? No, I've barely grazed the surface with that. It's a very slow process. So I'm going to be that's going to be the main thing I focus on for the next few days here.
So you're getting what, about 6 or 8 pieces per clamp up, or?
No, it's one piece now, because at the tail where they come together, I'm trying to explain this so it makes sense to people listening, but you know, where the pieces come together, they form like a V.
Right.
So you've got to do half of it, you know, one side, the I'm working on the passenger side, so I've got to do that side. Then I can draw a line down the center, cut all those pieces off, and then put the intersecting pieces on the other side.
Oh, okay. No, I was thinking that you were not a woodworker, but I was thinking that you would be putting the intersecting pieces on each side together at the same time. But what you're talking about sounds like it would be easier in the end. I would probably be swearing a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of swearing going on. I'm sure all my neighbors are a little terrified at this point. There's been a lot of stuff flying across the yard.
You seem so calm.
Yeah. I'm exhausted at this point, so I can't be angry right now.
Well, you know me, I'd be throwing stuff across the lawn too.
Oh yeah, I went and picked all those pieces up today, so I'm just gonna start with a fresh press slate tonight or tomorrow.
So
yeah,
that rib down the center, once they all meet, once you're all done, that rib down the center, are you going to, like on a canoe, there's like a, I forget the word for it. There's a word for that spline, right? That they put like a thing over top. Are you going to do something over top on the back, like a piece of brass or?
I'm still thinking about that. I'm not, I really like how it looks where they come together. I'm just not sure if that joint is going to try to move over time. So that's something I'm thinking about. I might do a piece of polished aluminum or polished brass or something.
Probably whatever's going to match. Whatever will match the gas headpiece at the end of that joint.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll do that gas cap, whatever accents, and then I'm sure it'll be aluminum actually, because I'm going to do a hood out of aluminum.
I'll do it all out of brass. Keep that boat theme going.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
the brass four would look times nice. The cost.
Yeah,
maybe more.
Chris has
it. I got the aluminum. Yeah, problem is I don't really sell anything though.
So on top of being a car builder, you also do a lot with lasers, a lot with CNCs, traditional woodworking, traditional metalworking, sheet metal, and you're technically a hot rod mechanic or something, right? Aren't you? Didn't you go to hot rod school?
Yeah. So I was a welder in the Navy, and I learned a lot about metalwork in there. But I went to this place, the Hot Rod Institute, when I got out, and you know, I only did like 6 months there, but I did their paint and custom auto body program.
Okay.
So, you know, they let you play with all the cool tools, shrinkers and stretchers and English wheels and you know, power hammers, but nothing like what Tony, nothing that heavy duty. lots of cool stuff. That was a pretty fun place. I learned a lot there.
Multidiscipline.
Yeah. Well, As a welder in the Navy, like what would they have you doing and with that? Like is repair work on ships mainly or what? I guess.
A lot of plumbing related stuff. You know, it's everything is so heavily used, you know, plus rust is a big issue. You know, you got all the salt, you know, corroding everything. So you're kind of constantly going through and replacing different sections of pipe and, you know, especially stuff outside, a lot of different sprinkler systems and
okay.
all sorts of stuff.
Any underwater stuff or no?
No, they don't really have a lot of Navy guys doing that anymore. That's a lot of contractor work.
Oh, okay.
They usually call contractors.
Very cool.
Yeah. Just curious. I mean, I used to weld at one point in time, not really fully as a profession, but I was more in food industry years ago. So lots of stainless is what my thing was.
Is that TIG? Did you use TIG for that?
Yeah, a lot of just and it was like scratch TIG. It wasn't super high quality work, but it was a lot of repair work. So
isn't scratch TIG when you're pretty much welding some heavy duty stuff, right?
Not really. It's pretty light stuff. I call it scratch TIG because that's how we got it started. You had to actually like scratch it,
yeah,
to get it to start. So there is like I never used the foot pedal. Like I never got into that all that jazz. Like that's art form.
That's the TIG welding I've done is with the pedal and the rod.
Yeah, I can't scratch my head and pat my belly at the same time. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, we used to have to do that stuff. We'd be 10 feet up in the air, laying on top of a pipe, trying to weld something. And we'd have somebody down below hitting the foot pedal for us. And, you'd yell on and off when you wanted them to turn it on or off. I remember one time I had this girl, she was welding up on a pipe and, I was talking to somebody and I was operating the pedal for her. She's yelling off. And I wasn't hearing her cause we were just all talking about whatever. And, finally she's screaming up there to turn it off.
Burning holes through it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I think some people don't realize how difficult pipe is to weld. Like it's, and especially when you get, it's in a fixed position. It's one thing if you can rotate around it. You get into I'm sure you were into some tight spots with the work you were doing. Oh, yeah. Made it difficult.
Yeah, that was rough work. That was dirty work too. I don't miss that. It was fun. I learned a lot from it.
Yeah. How long were you in?
Just 5 years.
Okay.
When I was in school, I could TIG weld real good. Awesome. I thought I was the man. I really did. I thought I was the greatest TIG welder out there. Anything I could do, we would have the trick with the aluminum can to the aluminum can. You know, I never did the razor blade to razor blade. I thought I was great. And then I left school, never had a TIG welder. I go to TIG weld a few years later. I knew nothing. The guy only taught us what he would say was the ballet of welding. Never once taught us how to set it up. So I knew nothing on how to set it up. Nothing. So I've never been able to TIG weld again. Never. Not that I own one, but.
Yeah, I think I could, if I got a welder, give me about a half a day and I could probably TIG again, but I definitely will never say that I was all that good.
I just got a MIG welder. I haven't welded in what feels like 20 years, probably less than that, but it's going to be a learning curve for me.
Yeah, I finally got 220 set up in my garage, so I can break my welders out. And, you know, it's been a few years for me too, so I'm sure I'm going to be a little rusty when I'm getting back into it.
You ever make, what do they call them? The guy, when I was in school, he used to teach us that they're called like tags or keys, where you take a little piece of whatever the metal is and you write on how thick it is or whatever, and you write on it, like you weld it until you can get whatever your settings are. There's the one on the inside of the welder is only going to get you ballpark. Depends on how you do it. But he had a name for it, and he used to call them like
clips, tags, was it?
Keys. I don't know. And you would throw them on your welding cart and you would just have it. So it would be like, this is the way, like if I'm doing 20 gauge, this would be for how I weld, that's the best set of settings, you know? You would call them keys or tags. So I want to go get a bunch of scrap, different size metals, and do that again. Like start from the basics.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Instead of blowing holes in it every time.
Yeah, I do find for, at least for my welder, the stuff inside the door is actually pretty accurate. But I tend to weld a little hotter with most of what I do. Just move fast.
Yeah, but I mean, it's all about all those door things get you real close, but then it's but that's in a perfect world, right? That's if a robot's welding it, that's what they would do it, right? Because it's gonna be perfect every time. So like the angle of your gun or the speed you move at or how far out you go, all that matters. So you just need to adjust it from that point a little bit.
Yeah, and the if you're going up or down, push pull, all that stuff makes a big difference in how you're doing it.
Oh yeah,
I've been playing with like a flex core welder. And I've been too busy, cheap, stubborn to go get the gas so I can run the standard wire. And it's just every time I run out of wire, I've been in the middle of something. So I'm like, all right, let's just go grab another reel of flux core and just keep going because I need to get this done. And but yeah, at some point I got to do it and set it up because I know that I'm going to get a better result from the gas.
Yeah, I bought that welder off Manny. Too many mistakes, and it didn't come with a bottle. So luckily I got it a couple of weeks before he got his new welder, and he just so happened to post on Instagram, and I happened to be on Instagram when he posted. I was like, dude, pick me up a bottle, because I would have let it go. I had an old welder at my house I had for, I don't know, 5 years, maybe longer, that I just never got a bottle for, so I never used it. So while he was at the shop, because I always make excuses why I can't leave work to go get a bottle. So he picked it up for me and dropped it off. So I'm all set.
Or now mail just, stuff.
Yeah. Well, I did get out and mail that stuff. Yeah. I was tired of hearing about it. Matt and Drizzy pushed me. I forget what day it was, Thursday or something. So I went out Friday and mailed it for you.
Just so everybody knows, it wasn't me pushing them. It was everybody else.
It was not you at all. You're like, I don't care when I get it. Everyone was. I was getting DMs, text messages. My wife was on my case. I got in the car. Tony's stuff is still on the passenger seat. I know. I got to go mail it.
Yeah.
So, Chris, what's the deal with this Easy Up table you got on your YouTube?
So, I had worked with this company before, FlexiSpot is their name, and they wanted to do something again, and I kind of ignored their email a couple times because, you know, I got all this stuff going on with the car, and they emailed me again, and I was just like, yeah, sure, send it. And they wanted a video to be out between the 22nd and 28th of this month. So they sent them out and their stuff shows up quick. I started working on it, started trying to figure out a design. And, you know, in my head, everything all made sense. And I thought it was all going to go great. I went and got a butcher block top, cut a pattern out that was like a like hexagons. Yeah, just a hexagon pattern.
Like a honeycomb.
Yeah, but without like all the lines. It was just a big, big pocket, you know? Filled that with epoxy, and I don't know. I just guess I just wasn't paying attention or whatever. Didn't really pay attention to what the measurements were, and just sort of winged it, or whatever. And ended up having problems. Obviously,
cured too hot.
It got real hot.
I remember messaging you after you had that mistake and saying that's the best use of epoxy I've seen.
Yeah,
when you were having to CNC it back out.
Yeah. So that was the fix to mill it back out. But of course, that caused more problems because of there's just so much static electricity. I mean, it was ridiculous. I was vacuuming the stuff up later, and it was like shocking me bad.
Yeah, we've had at work, we've had steam leaks and stuff, and the steam will build up static, and when it hits you, that is a wallop. Like it's very shocking. Surprising when it hits you.
So what do you do though? Can you ground the steam pipe or no? Like, is there a fix for it?
That's what we ended up doing, because it was a line that we weren't able to fix because we weren't able to shut it down. So we ended up actually just tying a ground strap to it.
So you never found a fix for your situation? Ferrite clips I sent you weren't good enough, Chris?
They kind of helped. What I ended up doing, so I got all the epoxy cleared out, poured new stuff in. Then I came through and cut out a hexagon pattern in that, and didn't have any disconnects while that was going on, because I figure I wasn't, you know, making that many chips that time. But then after, you know, everything was said and done, I needed to surface it. And, you know, I had those ferrite clips on there. It still was shutting off. I turned my vacuum is like adjustable. I can change how much amperage it's drawn.
Okay.
So it like won't blow the circuit when you're using it with a tool. So I turned that down. That didn't really help. Finally, I ended up spraying it with water. I read somebody said, you know, try spraying whatever you're cutting with a little bit of water, and that worked. So I guess that was enough, just to, you know, put a little bit of moisture in the air and not let it build up so much static.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So yeah, I was finally able to get through that and get some finish on it. You know, in my head, I was thinking, yeah, this is a 2 or 3 day project, and, you know, the CNC will do all the work for me, and I'll just come in and put a little bit of epoxy in it when I need to, and, you know, shut it off and start things. And
I did like your video on it. It made me laugh. I'm going to put this on easy mode.
Yeah.
Just draw in some hexagons. Did you see it, Tony? He just draws in like paint with his finger.
Yeah. I just watched the video there when I just got home. So
it
was pretty good.
I wonder if that was my issue with my CNC and it shutting off was my vacuum.
I mean, that seems to be what it was, you know, what was really causing it.
So
just as all those particles were going through there.
Rockler, I don't know who else, but Rockler has that anti-static hose. Do you think that would help that situation? Or do you think it's just the false promise?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's worth a shot. I'll try anything at this point. You know, everybody says ground the machines and, you know, add like those ferrite caps and all that stuff. And I don't know. So I've got a Shapoko, and it seems to be a pretty big problem with them. But it's like some guys really have the problem. Some guys don't ever have it. I used to never have it. You know, I could cut MDF and all that stuff and never have the problem. Now,
have you checked how dirty like the motherboard is or anything like that? Like, could it be that has built up dust over time, and the guys that don't really have the problem don't create as much dust as you do?
Yeah,
I feel like your machine's running every week. So
yeah, it's something to look into. You know, maybe it is a more of a maintenance thing.
Could it be a humidity thing too?
No,
I think that's a lot of it. I think that's why, you know, maybe getting the stuff I was cutting wet, maybe that.
Yeah, because you'd think the drier it is, the worse.
Yeah,
your that shock or static buildup would be.
Yeah, but then again, I mean, I'm in South Carolina, so.
Yeah, I didn't think you're in a real, real dry, arid climate down there. Yeah. Never been, but I'm guessing.
So what about all your lasers? Since Shad's not here, we got to get some laser talking.
Yeah. So
is this the actual laser master here?
Who's got more? How many lasers do you have?
I don't know. I guess 6 or 7, maybe. Maybe at this point.
Chad's gone.
I started out with that Auteur, and that video did really well and got a lot of attention from different companies. And it's like everybody's making a laser now. So everybody wanted a video on stuff, but then Auteur is making new lasers and you know, they wanted to send me new stuff. So, you know, I got a couple Auteurs. Now I just got for guys that aren't familiar with them, those Auteurs were like a 5 to 5.5 watt output power, which is pretty low power, but I mean, you know, they'll still cut through stuff and, you know, they're really good for engraving. But now these companies have been starting to step up and do different things. There's a couple making what they call as dual diodes, and these are 10 watts. I just got one from Xtool, and Atomstack sent me one also. I'm testing them out right now, and that's a huge difference. I was pretty surprised by it for something that's relatively inexpensive. You know, these ones are a little more than like the Auteurs were. I guess that Xtool is about $700 or so. But you know, it's a pretty powerful and pretty well made laser that, you know, you can have sit on your desk. And I was cutting out like 5mm plywood with it.
In one pass, or?
Very nice. Yeah, that was, you know, it was running pretty slow still, but, you know, again, this is only a 10-watt diode laser, so.
On the video I saw, I don't know if it was on your story, so I don't know if it's still out there, but on the video I saw, it was pretty clean cut, even though it went real slow. Like, it didn't look burned out on the bottom, where, like, my Auteur would look burned out on the bottom if I did that.
Yeah.
So it's moving faster than an Auteur would. Would you say 2 passes would be better? Is it a clean cut?
Probably. I got to play with it a little more. And so they have their own software. You know, normally I would use Lightburn with my Auteurs or any of the other ones. Xtool has their own software. And, you know, it's kind of like what we were talking about with the welders, where it's got like your recommended settings for everything. And, you know, you kind of tell it like what you're cutting and, you know, how many passes you would like to make, and it'll adjust your power settings and your speed and stuff like that. You know, and you can go in and adjust them if you need to, so you're not like stuck with that stuff, but it kind of gives you a baseline. And, you know, for now I just started out with it, so that's what I've been using. They're just their baseline kind of recommended settings.
Right. So getting on the software side, let's switch from lasers, because we don't want to make Chad too jealous that you have more lasers than he does. The CNC stuff, you use not Fusion, not VCarve. You use a company called
CarveCo. So for people that were familiar with CNC stuff, they might have heard of ArcCam. And ArcCam got bought out by the guys that make Fusion. And you know, they wanted some other software that they had. So they'd been gone for a couple of years. But then a bunch of the guys that were in the company got together, bought the rights back to it, and they just had to change the name on it. So now they have CarveCo, which, you know, is super high end, really nice 3D design software, but it's got like an $8,000 price tag on it. So they came out with a couple of hobbyist and you know, small business friendly ones called Maker and Maker Plus. So those are what I use.
Yeah, because as I've discussed previously, I'm in the market to get away from Fusion because it's not working well with my CNC and my workflow. Like, it doesn't have it probably does, but it's not worth it for what I've seen on VCarve. So I've been watching some of your videos on the CarveCo, and that may be, it looks easier to design in CarveCo than in VCarve.
Yeah, you know, they have a lot of similarities between the two. You know, a lot of the guys all probably worked together at one point. So, you know, they're all in England. They all, I think, know each other and whatever, but they, I don't know, I guess some of the stuff feels a little more natural to me. Would you say it almost feels more like Photoshop or something?
Okay.
Right. You know, like the designer or like Illustrator, like a lot of the, just the controls and the layout and everything reminds me of that. So I guess I'm a little more able to relate to that.
I struggle on some of these, like the Inkscapes or I want to say simplified programs. Mm-hmm. I use AutoCAD every day and it's just easy and I can do everything I want. I hate these programs that are like, oh, draw a square. And you just draw a square in space and then you give it its dimensions as opposed to choosing where it's going to go and then giving it dimensions. Like I have to do it. Like there's all these extra steps and I know they make it so it's easy for the layman to use it, but it seems
this guy right here is the one that's built for his hand.
Yeah. It seems like they do it in a way that is probably for anyone who's never drafted before. It's easy to do. But for me, it's not intuitive to do it the way that the intuitive people are supposed to do it. Mm-hmm. So it's like backwards for me and I struggle with it and I can't figure them out. So I got to find the one that works for me. And the couple videos I've seen on Carbco, that one may do it, but I may do all my design work still in Fusion or AutoCAD and then bring it into one of these other ones.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it depends on what you're doing, I guess for more technical stuff, maybe, you know, Fusion would be a little better, but if you're going to be trying to, you know, take images or whatever and turn them into like a vector file and you want to be able to like actually draw and stuff, I think probably Carveco is going to be a little better for that.
Yeah. I'm less of an artist and more of a, let me draw this.
More of an engineer.
Yeah. Yeah. Got the engineer's mind, I guess.
Yeah. That stuff's been tough for me too. It is an art of its own, just doing that stuff. And then when you get into the 3D part of it, it's a whole new dimension to it. So that's even harder. I went and bought one of the drawing pads and whatever and thought maybe that would help me, but I just need to spend more time. Yeah. Yeah. And it works great. It's, you know, just I'm not to that level yet. So
yeah. I mean, maybe I'll get there, but I hate all these programs. Like I've used, I struggle with Fusion, you know, mm-hmm. when I want to do something simple. So I have Easel. So I'll just throw up Easel real fast. And it's like, all right, you put the letter in, you want to center it. There's no way to actually center it. There's a way to get it kind of center, but like, it's so, I don't know. I don't like any of these programs. I think they're all childish in a way.
So like you mentioned Inkscape, I tried learning that because, you know, I do these videos for people and try to teach them how to use stuff. And it's tough to tell somebody that's using, you know, Carbide Create, which is a free CNC software that comes with their machine, that, you know, they need to use, you know, an Adobe product or something that's going to cost them like 30 or 40 or whatever bucks a month, you know, to actually design something. So I started trying to learn Inkscape and I just couldn't wrap my head around that. It's probably like what you're saying. It's just not intuitive. You know, I've been using the other things for so long that it's just difficult to go to a program like that.
That's exactly how I feel. I don't know how they do it. And then it limits you on what you can do in there. And there's no reason for the limitations. Like, why can't I snap to something? Why can't I choose a length? Yeah. You know, they're like, oh, draw a line and then move away from the line, then go back, highlight it, and then put a dimension on it. Why can't I just choose my start point and put a dimension on it? Like, it's not... Like, come on, people. Like, one more line of code in your program. Just put it in there. Be done with it. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe that's why Autodesk gets the big bucks. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. The stuff that drives me nuts is like, you know, now you've got these companies that, you know, have a machine out and they, for whatever reason, think that making their own software is a good option. And, you know, I guess maybe they see it as a way to sell someone a whole package or something, but you've got these other companies that have been out there with, you know, 20 years of experience doing this stuff. It's like, I fought it for a long time. I kept using the free programs and, you know, I really pushed them to the limit.
I could see it as a complete novice, which I would be like, it would be nice to buy a full package from one source. And I can see how that would be appealing, but I can see how what you're saying, I mean, with your experience, I mean, it just shows that it's probably a better situation to find machine that you want and then go with the program that works best for you.
I'm okay with a machine coming with a program that's free or that they designed, right? Just so it's like one package. But years ago, before the whole Cricut phase, I bought a Silhouette, which was Cricut before Crickets were out. I don't even know if they're still out there. But I bought it, and it comes with its own software. But the software is proprietary to the machine. So I can't use anything but their software. So I hardly ever use the machine because I want to draw something in AutoCAD and just drop it in. A program I know how to do it, and I can't do it. I have to buy something through their thing. Like if I want, I don't know, a moon shape, I have to buy it and drop it in. That's what gets me. I don't care that they do it and it's limiting, but when it's only that, that's royally frustrating.
Yeah, I could see that for sure.
Yeah, I can see where it's attractive to the companies. You know, obviously they benefit from it. They're not just selling you a machine. They're selling you the software that, you know, requires maintenance and all that stuff that, you know, you're going to be paying for forever on. So, you know, they all want to try to get on that bandwagon. But like I said, you got companies out there that got, you know, 20 plus years of experience doing this stuff and they just do it better.
Not only that, now, they have already built the platform.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're going to recreate the wheel. In some cases, the wheel should be recreated, like AutoCAD to Fusion. That was a whole new thing when they went with Fusion. So me, an AutoCAD drafter of 20-something years, I don't know how to use Fusion. I don't know how to use it. So that's frustrating. But it's a better drafting program, I think. I'll let you know when I learn how to use it. What about the software on your Anvil, Tony? How often do you have to upgrade that? Is that a subscription service? How's that work out there?
No. I have to go find information and upload it to my brain.
So the CarveCo thing on Fusion, I love Fusion because if I buy from Tools Today, they give me the whole tool list and I can take their tool list with their speeds and feeds and all that stuff. Each tool is measured. I don't have to do any of the work. Does CarveCo do that as well? I can just import it in?
Yeah, actually, I want to say it's already got the whole, it's either, maybe it's just a Mana, but I think you can get the whole tool library from Tools Today and, you know, upload it in there and then you've got all that stuff. So, you know, it gives you a good baseline for where to start.
I like having it all like from Tools Today and I don't want to give them too much free airtime. But I like that I can download their entire library and then I'll go online and look for a new bit just to see, is this going to increase my speeds before I even buy the bit? You know, I can plug it into Fusion and figure out if that's a better way, like if it's only going to save me 2%, is the cost worth it over the course of that project, or should I spend the money and buy that extra bit? That's what I like, that having the whole library for. And I hate measuring the stuff and plugging it in and looking up speeds and feeds and all that stuff. VCarve, you kind of have to do all that manually, right? You don't know. You don't use VCarve.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've used that. I mean, I want to say you can just upload the same libraries and everything.
Yeah, I'll look into it. I mean, they're both expensive programs, but yeah. I'm not going to cheap out, so I'm going to get one of them. But I really want to know now because the one from CarveCo is on sale this week. So
yeah, they got the Maker Plus. They got a couple good Black Friday deals on. So if you have been considering upgrading, that's definitely something you want to look into. Yeah. You definitely want to use my affiliate link for that.
I will. If I so choose your company, I'll go your way. I always try, and this goes for any of us. If you know somebody who has an affiliate link for whatever brand it is, seek them out and use it. It's a big deal for whoever has the affiliate link to keep that and whatever benefit they get from said company. It helps them out. For us at Working Hands, Sabretooth is that code, and it's WH. It will save you 10% on anything that you buy from Sabretooth for all your carving needs.
So now that we're talking about that, I finally just bought a cordless grinder, Makita one. I'm in the Makita line. So
the die grinder?
Just showed angle grinder.
Okay.
So just showed up today. So I think I'm going to be looking into something to start doing some wood carving there.
Yeah.
Is that one of their 4.5s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what you use, right, Tony?
I have a 5, but mine's. We call a rat tail, or what I call a rat tail.
Cool. That means corded, right?
It's corded out the back, yeah.
Yeah.
Out the handle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I already had a couple corded ones, but
I don't own one, but I do like, and I'm sure Makita's the same way, but the DeWalt cordless, they're tanks. They really are. So I assume Makita's the same way.
Yeah, yeah. I worked in a food plant. We had Makita's, and they had a boneyard of Makita 5-inch grinders that they just, if they drop one and broke something, they just, everything's interchangeable. They just swap parts, swap triggers, swap brushes, and they just, the amount of grinders they had, that just became their tool that they use for all that, that's any cutting or anything. Yeah, it's really cool, and I've always liked them. The one I have isn't a Makita, but it's a Makita clone, so it made me kind of, that's why I went with it, because saved a few bucks, and I've had it 10 or 12 years now, so it's paid for itself many times over.
Yeah, I was using the ones the first year of Maker Camp that Rich at 42 Fab brought. And it was the first time I welded in years, and my welds were pretty bad. So I spent quite a bit of time on his grinders. So yeah, they work pretty well. The battery, I wouldn't think a battery operated grinder would last as long as they do, but they do, they do. But yeah, Chris, if you're going to get into carving, I dig it. I'm going to be doing some bowls as soon as I get my shop back together. That's the next.
Did you see, Ronder's finished product?
Oh yeah.
That looked pretty sweet.
Yeah. He like squeezed it with the metal, like squeezed the wood for those that didn't see it. He made this table. He's Ronders is what, a lab guy, you'd say. So he took
his big thing is chainsaw milling.
But he had a client that asked him for a table. So what he did was he had this big slab, pretty thick. What was it, like 3 inches thick, maybe four? I don't know.
Yeah, it was a healthy slab. It was three inch plus.
We're making this up as we go. But then what he wanted to do, he welded up these square metal legs that went like from the ground up and over the top of the table and back down. And then what he did was he carved it so it looked like the metal was compressing the wood. And he carved it so it all looked like it squeezed together. Go check out his posts. They're pretty well. I think he has posts. I know he did stories.
He did something. I'm sure he did a post with it.
Ronders, make sure you make a post because we're calling you out here again on our podcast. So. And at least make a post, but yeah, check it out. It's a pretty wild piece.
So I guess since we've gone through our sponsors, we might as well go through and thank our patrons.
We prefer patrons.
we have one on tonight, so if yes, he prefers patron.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Chris.
Yeah, that's our short list for guest hosts. So just so you know. Added benefit.
Yeah.
So we'll go through the list here. We got Uncle Sam Metalworks, Too Many Mistakes, Green Street Joinery, I'm always going to screw this up. Artigiano Sorio. I will screw that up forever, but he is not.
He has not
cussed me out yet, so.
That one time you got it right, you have to cut that out and insert it in.
Next on the list is Full Steam Designs by Chris Powell.
Who's that guy?
We might know that guy. Lillian Archer Photography, David Beckwith Makes, NB Wood Finery, and our top supporter is eSpoke Studios.
eSpoke. Thank you all.
Thank you all
to those who aren't on that top supporter list. Thanks everyone. We appreciate it. Also, we'd like to have you reach out and share the show with a friend, or all your friends would be better. If you want, if you're on Apple, you can leave a 5-star review. If you write up a review while you do that, we'll read it on air, call you out. Anything you want, as long as it's a 5-star, is fine with us. We don't have any new ones that I know of, unless they're international, which I didn't check international reviews in the past 2 days. But yeah, if you want to find us, you can find Chris at Full Steam Designs on Instagram. He is Chris Powell on YouTube. Yep. Just Chris Powell. If you do search Full Steam Designs, he does come up. If you look at the maker ones for Full Steam Designs. Chad's not here, but if you want to find Chad, you can find him at Instagram, YouTube, Reddit, wherever, at Chad's Custom Creations. Tony's at Woodland Iron, and I am at Blackthorn Concepts. The collective three of us is at Working Hands Podcast at gmail.com or Working Hands Podcast on Instagram. With that, I'd say we go over to the after show.
One last piece that we forgot.
Oh, who did we forget?
We did not. Well, just a reminder on our giveaway with Maritime Knife Supply, the sweatshirt,
the toque,
beanie, toque, and
Chris, what do you call this?
I've never heard of a toque.
Me either, but I want
you one. Started saying it.
That's totally a Canadian thing.
You know
we're going to keep it.
You know who's big into saying toque is Jason.
Oh, yes.
Always with that guy. Got to get your toque before you go on. But yeah.
So just a reminder that we're going to draw that December 4th. I think we're going to try and do a live or something to draw for it.
I think that's 1 week after this airs.
Yeah, something like that. You know, I should be organized and have that, but yeah.
I should have a calendar up every time we do this, and I never do. Yeah, you'll have
that's the Saturday.
1 week. So you'll have 1 week to do that. It definitely takes some friends in there. If you think somebody else would want all that gear,
tag him.
Go have a look at Maritime Knife Supply as well. He's got himself a nice little business going there right now. He's been about a year, I think, right now. Maybe two.
But that's it?
He just got rolling.
Much longer.
Yeah, he's been a knife maker for quite some time. I'm not sure how long, but he started this within the last year, probably year and a half, I think. Mm. And it looks like he's doing quite well and seems to be growing the amount of products he has in stock.
He does have tongs, which I've been looking at about picking up a set.
Yeah, he's got some tongs made by they're blacksmith made out of Alberta. Sean Cunningham Front Step Forge, okay. I think is the name. They look really sharp. They're really well made. So
I got to get the wife a set of tongs. So
he's even got, I think he's got a line of anvils now. He's got two lines of heat treat ovens. He's got both Even Heat and Paragon, which are, I think, the two leading brands out there. So
the only two I've ever heard of. So
yeah, I'm sure there's more, but yeah, he's got a very large catalog and it seems to be growing every day. So go have a look, see if he's got anything you like. So with support, that, I guess we'll
support those that support us.
Yes, exactly. So with that, I think we'll head for the after show.
And if you want to support us, you can catch us over there. All right. Bye, everyone.
Later.
Later.